You know, some people think that I tell my story to get praise or to, you know, be on the news or be on shows like this. And you don't realize how difficult it is to become so vulnerable and to open your family up to that scrutiny. But I know how important it is, because when a news segment airs, I get hundreds and sometimes thousands of comments and messages and people who are suffering in silence. And they tell me how much inspiration they get. And so I don't want my struggles and everything that I've suffered to be in vain. Like, I really believe that God gives people struggles and trials to overcome them and then to be that hope and help to other people.
And a Safford City Council member is suspending his campaign for Congress.
A Safford City Councilman has suspended his campaign for Congress after suffering a heroin overdose.
His name is Chris Taylor. You may have actually know the name very well. It's been very publicized here in the Arizona media and the Arizona press.
Chris Taylor was running for the Republican nomination to challenge Democrat Tom O'Halloran this November.
And tonight, Chris Taylor says he is seeking treatment for substance abuse.
We first met Chris Taylor in 2017 as we dug in on the opioid problem plaguing the eastern Arizona city of Safford.
In a previous campaign ad, Taylor opened up about his struggles with opioid addiction after two tours in Afghanistan.
Taylor, a veteran who fought off addiction to open his own treatment center, was poised to be the success story for Safford. But he went backwards as old demons resurfaced last week. A relapse that resulted in an overdose. In a statement to suspend his congressional campaign, Taylor was very direct, saying, quote, "I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I wish to sincerely apologize to the amazing people who have supported me. It's a haunting reminder of a dark past that will always be looking over the shoulder of a bright future."
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. I am your host, and I am grateful that you are here to listen to me get my thoughts out in to vocalize my thoughts. I'm going to continue today, several days after the assault on the Capitol. My last video that was titled, or my last episode that was titled Sedition, kind of was a reaction in real time to what we were witnessing on January 6th. And now here we are, January 11th. We've been able to process what happened, and also, you know, there's been every day, every hour, there's been more information that has been made known to us that I need to continue to vocalize my thoughts so that I can understand how I really feel. That's the way that I go about almost everything in my life. If I don't get it out vocally to somebody, to all of you that listen to this podcast, to my wife, to my therapist, to my friends, I don't really know exactly how I'm feeling, because when you're stuck in your own head, your perspective is clouded, right? And you don't really know what you're really feeling and thinking. And oftentimes when I start talking about something, then I realize, maybe I don't feel the way that I initially thought I felt or whatever. And with all of the things circling around today, with impeachment now imminent in the House for the second time in this presidency, all kinds of things have occurred. One of the saddest things was news yesterday that another officer that was at the Capitol during the assault, during the failed coup attempt, has taken his life. And speculation is just that, and it's early, but a lot of reporting that I've heard is that you know, his legacy, his heritage runs deep in the Capitol Police. His father was the Senate Sergeant at Arms, who is, if you don't know, the Senate Sergeant at Arms or the House Sergeant at Arms is the head of security for that legislative body. And it's a prestigious posting, you know, and his father was a prominent person on Capitol Hill for many decades. He followed in his father's footsteps, and he has been protecting the Senate since 2005. And so, you know, I hate to speculate. People, you know, I don't like when people speculate about when somebody dies of suicide, you know, why that happened, because honestly, we'll never really know exactly why he did that. But one would think that the images that he was subjected to, you know, he had a fellow officer that was beaten to death, maybe right in front of him, or within the same vicinity. His father's legacy of protecting the Senate, ultimately, you know, that failed. Not saying that he failed, but the agitators, the insurrectionists, were able to breach the Senate floor. You know, and maybe he had other things going on, but I, right now, at least preliminarily, count that as a casualty of the actions on January 6th until I hear otherwise. So now there's been 6 individuals that have lost their lives. We've had lots of information come out about what was happening at the time. You know, there's one thing that I really didn't want to address, because I just talking about it lends credence to it. You know, this shameful ploy almost immediately after the events that day. People like Matt Gaetz, who's just a horrible, horrible Congress member, went to the House floor and already spouted lies about that there was evidence that the people that stormed the Capitol weren't really Trump supporters. They, in fact, were Antifa members disguised as Trump supporters. And they, you know, this bogus claim going around that there was facial recognition that has already determined that. And then that company that the Washington Times mentioned in that article came out and said, no, what are you talking about? Cease and desist. And they were forced to retract that. You know, it's just such a shameful ploy. You know, for all I can tell is from my comment lists, from my comment sections, is I don't really see anybody, a few people condoned what happened that, by saying, well, I've seen worse. I've seen Antifa and BLM do way worse. And, you know, whether you believe that's true or not, I'm sorry, but Antifa or BLM has never desecrated the symbolic heart of our democracy. They've never breached the House floor. In fact, nobody has been able to overrun the Capitol since the British did it in 1814 during the War of 1812. Okay. A few city blocks in Portland or Seattle is not the same as the United States Capitol building while there was a joint session of Congress with the vice president presiding. So let's just stop that right there. Not only is that just a bizarre delusion, the people that have been arrested and rounded up by the FBI are well-known Trump-supporting agitators that are at every rally for, you know, MAGA rally. They're groupies, basically. They follow the president around to wherever he holds his rallies, and they're there in costume. They're there with exuberance. They're there to listen to their dear leader and take direction from him. Several of these people are from Arizona, and I've seen them many times. I'm familiar with them. Okay, the guy with the horns, that crazy lunatic with the the get up that he had on, the costume with the Viking. I don't know what he was, what he's supposed to be, a Viking or a frontiersman. I'm not quite sure. Delusional is what he is. Psychotic is what he is. But I've seen him at various events around the state of Arizona while I was running for Congress, while I was involved as a precinct committeeman in the Republican Party. You know, to say that this guy is somehow an agent of Antifa is just a delusion of the worst kind. Another guy, I believe his name is Ray Epps. I'm very familiar with him. He's a very well-known individual in the Republican insider group since the president has taken power, at least part of the new establishment, if you will, the Kelly Ward, Andy Biggs, you know, Paul Gosar establishment of the party. This guy is well known. He was on video saying that we need to breach the Capitol doors. And then the first wave of attackers that pushed the barriers through, he was right there. And so now the FBI has his picture blasted on their page as one of the most wanted agitators for this failed coup attempt. And, you know, I'm sorry. What we have seen over the last several years with this MAGA nation, with this group of people, and I'm not talking about every person who voted for President Trump. Please don't take it that way. If you're a decent, honest person that happened to believe that the conservative policies that the president and his people would enact was more important than other things, I don't fault you for that. I'm talking about that small group of people who are so delusioned and so radicalized and so impassioned that they believe that, you know, I'm talking about the QAnons. I'm talking about the people that fly the Trump flag, not the American flag. I'm talking about the people that were at the gates storming the Capitol looking for Speaker Pelosi and Vice President Pence to kill them in the name of Donald Trump. Okay. This is a small group of radicalized people, much like a small group of radical Islamic terrorists have hijacked what it means to be a Muslim in the eyes of many people in the Western world, right? It's a small group of people that are jihadists, that are radicals, that are delusional, that believe that they're agents for Allah, for the Prophet Muhammad, that they are tasked with bringing forth the end times prophecies. That's why they engage in political warfare and terrorism, right? They believe that they play a role, that they are sacred followers of God, and everybody else is infidels. Okay, what is the difference here with people that have no doubt been radicalized over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years? They've always held beliefs of big, maybe some they've harbored some biases, racial biases. They've the way that they were raised, right, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s and 70s, there was racism, and it's kind of ingrained in them. Are they good people? A lot of them are, yes. It's not their fault that's the culture that they were brought up in. And they've always been decent people that have been very quote unquote conservative, right? And over the last 4 or 5 years, when Donald Trump rose to power, they were radicalized by their echo chambers of social media. When you look at my social media feed, you will see a very colorful, diverse set of opinions and people. It's a jumbled thing, right? Where I'm getting news sources and opinions from the far left, from the far right, from the moderate center, and I'm taking it all in, and I am able to see what is reality. Okay, if you only have in all your social media, your Twitter, your Facebook, your Instagram, all you have is those people that believe and think exactly the way that you do. And then you go out and search for news that is playing on your confirmation bias. That's what's called an echo chamber. And within that echo chamber, it's gotten worse on Parler and on some of these, Gab and 4chan, some of these more fringe platforms, right? That don't really have any terms of agreement with speech and hate speech and harming people and threatening violence and all of that. Twitter was finally, and Facebook and all that was finally able to, now that it's imminent President-elect Biden will in fact take the oath of office on the 20th. They were no longer kind of afraid of what the Trump government would do to them if they banned him outright. He's been in clear violation of their terms of agreement for their terms of use for years, right? But by virtue of his title, of his office, in deference to the President of the United States, they allowed him to continue to foment this conspiracies and these lies and these hateful attacks on people, these petty things, and I saw somebody shared with me a video that is now no longer active because Parler was shut down. It was a video on Parler that I believe the president shared it. I believe, I'm not sure, but it's like this really, how would I say it? Motivating type of video. It's like a recruitment video. And when I was watching it, it has patriotic themes and music and it has, sound bites of the president throughout the last several years of calling for his supporters to rise up and take back our country and all these things. And then since the election, it's been, the election was stolen from you. We can't let this happen. So this is all set to this very motivating music, this inspirational music. And there's all these graphics and things that are like, that are, it's, as a psychological warfare specialist, it is it's a very well-made recruitment video. And it is horrifying in the fact that it is nearly identical to an ISIS or an Al-Qaeda recruiting video. Okay, so when this occurred at the Capitol, when they breached the Capitol in what they firmly believed was a coup attempt, they thought that the president, he told them, "I will join you down in the Capitol, let's go." And they went. And they really thought, because they were lied to and they were influenced and persuaded to believe that the vice president had the authority to unilaterally stop the counting of the state's electors in the Electoral College that would affirm Vice President Biden to be the next president of the United States. And six people now have died as a result. How is it any different than a group of young Islamic men that are radicalized by the same type of process, being closed off in a echo chamber with these far fringe blogs of Islamic extremism and all of these things of saying that, the infidels are running our holy land and they're, doing all these things. They are turned into suicide bombers by these mass grand manipulators. I can say that the only, and I've seen it firsthand. I have friends, interpreters of mine that were young Muslim men, 17, 18, 19 years old when they worked for me as an interpreter in Afghanistan, that were so pro-United States, pro-West, pro-Western. They loved the music. They loved the culture. They loved the cuss words. They loved everything. And then when I left, within a certain amount of number of years, I've seen the best type of people radicalized by ISIS, Al-Qaeda, that ideology, and they turned against the United States. They turned against me. They turned against their fellow interpreters. They fled to Germany or Belgium, and they were involved in you know, who knows what. It's no different than what some of my good friends that I've seen that are conservatives that have fallen for this manipulation. The only difference really is that the people that were at the Capitol were not very, how should I say it, good fighters. You know, they kind of, you know, it was like a trial, right? It was like a trial by error. Like, well, I want to be a revolutionary. Let's see what happens, right? And they kind of were like, what should we do? We've come this far. I've seen some videos. This guy's like, we've come this far. What do you say? Let's go do it, right? The Taliban or ISIS would have had a first wave of suicide bombers that took out all of those police that were there. And they would have stormed the Capitol with guns and RPGs and bombs, and they would have killed every single person in the Capitol because they've had years and years and years to practice and to embolden themselves. This, what we see now, is simply a genesis of a radical extremist movement. Make no mistake, we are, if not already, on the verge of a real civil war, a second civil war. And if you think that that's hyperbole and you think that that is, I'm out of my mind, ask somebody who is a real believer, a zealot for the MAGA nation. They already believe it. They just haven't gone down that path far enough to where they realize that terrorism is going to meet some of their needs. Violent, blood running in the street type. And I'm not talking about these people who like to put on a Kevlar vest and they never serve in the military, but they pretend they're an oath keeper or a sheepdog or whatever the hell they pretend to be. You saw them at the Capitol. The 82nd Airborne would have been down there and would have kicked every single one of their butts and got them out ASAP, right? That's not the issue. But when over the next 3-4 years of this Biden administration, with a somewhat exiled former President Trump from his ivory tower, wherever he's going to be in Mar-a-Lago or wherever, continuing to stoke this type of violence, they are going to get organized. There's already FBI reports and warnings that there is armed insurrections planned for this week, for the week fall, before the January 20th, when President-elect Biden takes the oath of office. And get this, in every state in the union, all 50 states, the FBI has warned that there is some sort of organizing going on. What we saw on January 6th was just a preview of, like, you know, they were kind of there for what they thought they wanted to do, but they didn't really have a leader. They kind of were just like, yeah, they were caught up in the wave of the thing. It's called, mob rule. You don't really know what takes over in that moment. All of your insecurities and anxieties and all of your grievances are being vocalized by a very powerful person that you have put on a pedestal right up there with the Savior Jesus Christ. These people profess that Donald Trump is an agent of a righteous God that is sent to destroy the evil pedophiles that are in power. Like, I don't see how you don't think, how you can't see this for what it is. All extremism from the horrible people that have infiltrated BLM and you know, these people that you want to call Antifa. You know, I agree with the FBI director, the Trump appointed FBI director, mind you, that says, and I quote, that Antifa is really not an organization at this point. It's an ideology, right? And you might scoff at that. But what they mean is that it has the potential for to have a more put together, organized movement. But right now it's just you can't really investigate or target something that hasn't really materialized. White supremacy and far right fringe militia groups have organized. They've been organized. They've been kind of they call themselves Minutemen, right? They've been waiting for a call to action. They've been waiting for a unifying figure that can voice all of their concerns. And is that person Donald Trump? Probably not. There's probably somebody that's in within those ranks that will rise up to kind of lead that movement. And I'm telling you right now, if the FBI, the Justice Department, if the law enforcement organizations in every state don't do something drastic right now and put an end to this right now while it's in its infancy, we will see blood in our streets from our own countrymen killing us. I am not an alarmist. I'm very moderate in my views, in my fears. I don't use hyperbole. I'm telling you that I've seen this firsthand in Afghanistan. My job in psychological warfare was considered a subject matter expert in the culture and the history of Afghanistan and all of the things that went into the Taliban taking power and losing power and coming back organized to take back power again. It's radical. They've been radicalized, no different than these people on the far right that have hijacked what it means to be a Republican, that have hijacked what it means to be a conservative. And we are in for a rude awakening if we don't think that we are a few steps away from an American Taliban. They just don't know yet how effective suicide bombers are. Once they do, they will find young men that are very able to be manipulated and persuaded to strap on a bomb and run into wherever. It's scary. And we have to band together and put an end to it. We just have to. I don't care if you've supported the president, if you still support the president, you have to wake up and say, those people don't represent me. And if I say that vocally and I come out against that, that doesn't mean that I am denouncing the president. Okay. You can do both. You can say, I still support the president for what he's accomplished, for what he's done. I don't happen to agree with that, but I understand that and I can respect that. I can't, however, condone or respect you trying to justify what took place on January 6th. And further than that, there's no way that I can even entertain the idea that it wasn't Trump supporters that stormed the Capitol, that it was really Antifa. That's bogus. That's bizarre. That's delusion. And if you really believe that, you need to seek some mental help, because that is not reality. I'm sorry. I know you wish it was. I know they tell you that it is. Your idols, your heroes are telling you that. but it's not so. So moving on real quick, where are we at now and where do we go from here? There's articles of impeachment or an article of impeachment that has been introduced and should be voted upon either today or tomorrow, Tuesday or Wednesday. President will be impeached. It's unlikely that he will be, that a Senate trial will even take place before he leaves office. But there is, constitutional scholars say that it actually is, it makes no difference if you impeach him while he's still in office and then the trial takes place after he's left. It still has the same effect. If he's impeached twice and he's found guilty in the Senate, he will be barred from ever holding office or running for office ever again. And the reason that I think that may occur is because people like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, I did a whole 30-minute segment on those two, but I didn't like it. It kind of came off, it kind of was still in my, I don't know, more of an angry stage, and I just didn't like the tone of the video, so I deleted it. So don't really get me started on those two. But there is some upside for them now that they realize that you know, competing to be the heir of the Trump kingdom didn't really do them any good, right? Because now they've lost all kinds of support. And they realize that they could still maybe be the Republican nominee, but are they ever going to be president by taking part in this? No. So how do they save face and how do they make their political star or standing go up or stay where it was is by taking out, kneecapping the president from the get-go. And where he's not a player in 2024, he'll still be a voice. He'll still be a kingmaker, if you will, but he won't be able to tease that he's going to run. And so that immediately opens the door for a Josh Hawley or a Ted Cruz to organize and try to take that lane and be that candidate. When we come back, we'll talk about where I'm at on the whole impeachment thing and the unifying the country. You're listening to the Come This Far podcast. All right, welcome back to the Come This Far podcast. You know, we're staying on this lane of the whole sedition, insurrection, siege of the Capitol that took place on January 6th. I'm going to Google real quick what day it is because I'm not quite sure. I know it's Tuesday. My phone is recording. Okay, it's Tuesday, January 12th, and I don't have a watch on, so that's why I did that. It's Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. So there is 8 days before the 20th, less a little over a week before January 20th. And so moving on to the debate of whether or not President Trump should be impeached. There is bipartisan support, whether there's a small group of Republicans in the House and in the Senate that will support impeachment. And the Democrats have the numbers already in the House to impeach him. He will be impeached. There's more support now than there was for the whole Ukraine debacle that he was impeached for and then acquitted in the Senate. But I go back and forth on this, right? Because I'm the type of person that studying history, if I was alive back during Watergate and when President Nixon resigned and when President Ford, who took office at, you know, as a result of that, pardoned President Nixon. And I think I would have been in the camp that said, you know, that's probably the best thing for the country to move on, to heal President Nixon for all the bad he did. He did do the honorable thing in the end. He resigned for the betterment of the country. I wish the president would do that, but of course that was never going to happen. The second option was for Mike Pence, Vice President Pence, to invoke Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, which if he had a majority of the cabinet members, the president's powers would be stripped and Mike Pence would be the acting president for the next 8 days. okay, that's more of what I wanted to happen. You know, this whole, you know how divisive and how chaotic and how there's such a crisis of leadership in the House of Representatives, right? That's why I was running for Congress, is because we need good people that care about the country and not their party and not their personal power and prestige and fame. It's all about fame now, really, in this era of you know, YouTube sound bites and fundraise, you know, being able to fundraise off of being seen as a defender of whatever. And that's both sides that do that. So you know that an impeachment in the House, while it will be sort of a lightning impeachment, I guess, the resolution will go straight to the floor and they will be an up and down vote. They will have some debate, but it'll happen, I think, tomorrow, Wednesday, the 13th. Let me look and see what day it is again. It's the 12th, Tuesday the 12th. So tomorrow, the 13th, I think, is when they are going to vote on that resolution to impeach. Unlikely, with Mitch McConnell still holding the majority leader's position, that there will be a trial before, and really there really can't be. There, you know, I think the last trial took 40, 50, 60 days or something weird like that. So there's no way that they can do it in 8, 7, 6 days. There's just no way. But so then the question is, well, should they even do it at all? Because what good is it going to do? Other than if he is, after he leaves office on the 20th, if he can still be found guilty in the Senate and they can bar him from ever running for office again. So I see more possibility of those people like Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, even probably Lindsey Graham. Some of these people, Mitt Romney, I know for sure would. Toomey, I think Senator Toomey has come out and said that he would. Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, you know, off the top, Ben Sasse. There's support for that, right, in the Senate, because for most of those people, there's at least two or three different motivations for that, right? And for Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, there's kind of some apprehensions too, because, you know, where they've already miscalculated gravely on this whole MAGA thing, this whole stoking this group for their political purposes. It's backfired major, and they're already trying to walk things back. They're already trying to whitewash, you know, what they've done over the last several years, but for sure the last several months since the election, right? They're already trying to, you know, Ted Cruz has always lived in a fantasy land, but they're just trying to change history, and we the people will not let that happen. Groups like the Lincoln Project will not let that happen. For the next two, three, four years, that's what you're going to see is you know, sound bites used against them in very well made ads, negative ads against them. That nobody's going to ever forget what Ted Cruz and what Josh Hawley did on January 6th and in the days and weeks and months leading up to that. But as far as it goes with the president being impeached and then having a trial afterwards, you know, President-elect Biden is kind of saying, well, you know, I really want to focus on my agenda. I really want to focus on getting my cabinet members confirmed. You know, he knows more than anybody how the Senate operates, and he knows that it's going to be very difficult for them to be riled up in a impeachment trial and then also try to get his first 100-day agenda put forth, which, keep in mind, the pandemic is raging out of control. More people are dying every day than ever at any point during the last year of this pandemic. Like, we forget about that really easy when all this other stuff comes into play. And so Joe Biden wants to move on. I can see, even, you know, I don't know if this would happen, but Joe Biden being the type of person that would at least weigh the option of pardoning the president and just moving on, you know, striking a deal with him to say, just basically exile, go live in exile, right? I mean, maybe we should even think about doing something like that happened with Napoleon, right? After he was finally shut down, he was sent into exile, but they gave him an island and let him be the emperor of this. You know, he had a whole royal court and you know, he was the king of that island, and it didn't work after he got restless, and then he tried to take back power. But, you know, I almost just think that if President Biden, when he takes office, could just sit down with the president and say, look, dude, this is over. You've been impeached. There's a looming trial in the Senate. I will pardon you if you just go away and let the country heal. That would probably be the best option in my mind. But I've heard the talk too from all of these people, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, Andy Biggs, all of these people over the last 4 years that have been, Matt Gaetz, all of these people that have just been sycophants for the president, that have been part of the group, you know, you saw him at the World Series, all of those people that were at the World Series with the president up in his box, you know, these, they sold everything to be married to power, to be able to have a key to the White House, to be able to go in the Oval Office or pick up the cell phone and call the president whenever they wanted, right? They were playing a role. They were playing a part. In Josh Hawley's case, that was definitely the case, because I know people that grew up with him and were with him in college and everything else. He's the type of person that from junior high on, his only mission in life was to be the president of the United States. He's always seen himself as a future president of the United States. He went to Yale. He became a U.S. senator at a very young age, 36 or something, I think. He's the youngest member of the Senate. He's a clear rising star in the party, you know, and he's been playing a role, a part, no different than Alex Jones with InfoWars, right? It's not real. He's playing these people. If this is you, he's playing you, right? And I don't believe that any amount of MAGA Nation supporters are listening or watching this podcast. So forgive me if this doesn't apply to you. But what I'm just trying to say is that we don't really know what will happen in the Senate if they take up impeachment. And do we want that drawn out thing for the country? Would it be better if we just put that all aside and moved on, start taking the pandemic seriously, start saving lives, start moving to where we can open our economy safely, and we can prosper again, we can have some unity. And so now all these people that were stoking all of these conspiracies and hateful rhetoric and bowing down to the president and bending at his every whim for the last 4 years, now they're going on Fox News and now they're going on all these things saying that we need unity and that we should move on and that it's not worth. And so what I heard today from the Rules Committee, forgive me, I don't know the congressman's name, the chairman of the House Rules Committee. I'll look it up. But he said something very true, and it struck a chord with me. He said, we absolutely want that, but it doesn't work that way. In order to have true healing, we need to have accountability. We need to have consequences for these actions. We can't just say, oh, you know, this coup failed, so let's just move on. What if we don't do everything possible to deter this from ever happening again, holding these people accountable? And that includes impeaching the president. And when you impeach the president and the Speaker of the House sends that over to the Senate, they are obligated to take it up. And they should be held accountable, much like the regular people that storm the Capitol are being held responsible and accountable. They're sitting in jail right now in a federal holding cell, waiting to be formally arraigned on serious charges. And so why should their ringleaders, people like Mo Brooks, not be with them? And will it bring more division? Yes, it will. But whose fault is that? You don't get to make an attack on somebody, and then because you lost, because you got your butt kicked, and you weren't really good at fighting. Because make no mistake, that was an assault. That was a full frontal assault on our Capitol. And it failed. So you don't get to come back and say, sorry, but let's just move on. It just doesn't work that way. Should we have situations where we are able to reintegrate people who were complicit in things over the last 4 years that if they do denounce, those lies and conspiracies, and they stand up and say, look, I was wrong. I thought I was fighting for what I believed in, for conservative values, but it went too far. And I want to apologize and make amends, and I want to continue to serve my constituents. Absolutely. I implemented or was part of the group that implemented the Taliban reintegration plan in Afghanistan when we had mass surrenderings, right? We had whole companies and platoons of Taliban fighters that lost the will to fight. And my job as a psychological warfare specialist was to facilitate that. And we couldn't just, you can't just kill them all. Right. You can't just, some people just got caught up in the movement that some of them were forced, right, to take sides of the Taliban, and they just wanted to be members of their country. And so we absolutely had set up a program where we reintegrated them and it made, reassimilated them into society. And was it seen as a form of amnesty? Yeah, it was, but it was in service of unity and coming together to try to salvage the country there. And so we shouldn't, every person that voted for Donald Trump, or every person that maybe has said something incendiary or has engaged in divisive rhetoric over the last 4 years, no, we shouldn't kick them out and ostracize them. We can't just silence people because they have real grievances. And what gets lost in all this is people like me, sympathy and even empathy for these people that really feel real grievances, and they should have a voice. But when that voice incites violent uprisings, and when complete lies and conspiracies are at the base of some of these grievances, we can't pretend that they're real. And so we have to hold those people accountable that started the lie, that sold the lie, that kept the lie going, I'm talking about the top ring, right? And everybody else who was a part of it that were overtaken, there is some forgiveness to be had there. And that is where we need to find unity. But we need to hold the people accountable because there's no healing that can come when people are not held accountable for their actions and consequences. It's no different than what you would want in your personal life with your child, that's made mistakes. You don't just say, oh, it's okay, continue on doing what you're doing. No, you teach them lessons. You show them that there is consequences for their actions, and then real healing can occur. And so I go back and forth, but I do believe that I do support impeachment of the president, and I do support a trial in the Senate. And if I was there, just based on what I know, I'd have to see evidence to the contrary, but I would vote to convict the president on the count of inciting a violent insurrection. And he should be barred from holding office ever again. Should he be pardoned if he's able to kind of have a some sort of an American version of exile? Yes, he should probably do that for the betterment of the country. No different than when Nixon was pardoned by Ford. But bottom line is, we can't just turn a blind eye to this. We can't minimize it. We can't justify it. In this whole whataboutism, well, oh, it's okay because look at what Antifa's done. Look what a BLM's done. Nonsense. That is such nonsense. We can condemn when looters and rioters infiltrate a worthy cause, which is of Black Lives Matter, and that you know, police officers should be held accountable when they break the law and when they kill innocent people. There's always that is a righteous cause. That is a worthy cause. There are people that take advantage of that when they're marching, and then they go and burn down buildings, and they go and in the name of Antifa, in the name of whatever. Yes, we condemn that, and we should always condemn that, and those people should be held accountable, and they should go to jail. But so should the people who incited the riot and the coup attempt in the Capitol on January 6th. And the reason that I really believe that is because they didn't learn their lesson. There's nearly 100 people that are facing charges so far, but yet the FBI warns that there's another more organized, crazy thing planned for the inauguration. And in possible armed insurrections in every state capital in America. So what do you mean we should just move on and not hold them accountable for what happened on January 6th? If we do that, we send them the message that they won. Terrorism is committing violence for a political end, to get your political needs met. And if we don't hold them accountable for January 6th, then they will have accomplished what they wanted. No, they won't accomplish that Joe Biden won't be the president, but they will have gotten away, by and large, with what they did. And that is where we just have to draw the line. And I do agree when people say, well, where was this condemnation when you know, all of the cities were burning this summer? It's not as black and white as you want to make it, right? And that's no pun intended with the race issue. It's more nuanced than that, right? Because you don't really know, people like Steven Jackson, who was George Floyd's best friend, the NBA star. We know him to be an honorable person. The movement that he was kind of leading was peaceful and was righteous and was worthy of our support as decent human beings. And there is an out of control element of police officers in America that are unchecked. And it goes farther than just the race issue. Right. And so we should support those type of things. We should not, however, support burning and looting and destroying government property. But it's difficult for a white American in this moment that we live in to come out forcefully against that, because it's easy to be seen that you're against the movement, the peaceful, righteous movement. And so it's a hard ground to walk on, right? And so, you know, that's why we need to have this dialogue. We need to have this conversation. We need to say it's okay to condemn the violent actions of those few agitators while still supporting wholeheartedly the peaceful Black Lives Matter protesters that are just grieving and hurting and sick and tired of their young men and women of color being murdered for no reason by police officers, and then being those police officers being justified. That there's it's more nuanced than left versus right or white versus black or police versus civilians. We always try to make these things simple, you know, and they're not. They're complex. One of the reasons we don't really understand the whole Syria war in Syria with all of those different factions is because it's not just a good versus bad thing. It's not just good versus evil. There's all kinds of moving parts and different groups and different allegiances and alliances, and it's you don't understand it as a regular citizen. And so we, you know, why didn't we just go in and take out Assad and kill him and take over? It's, you know, Russia and all of these things. There's more implications, right? It's I use this as an analogy because it's just so complex, and so is the situation that we have here, right? But I think that we've gotten to the point where we need to just simply condemn violence against fellow Americans. We need to condemn vile, hateful rhetoric. We need to condemn racism in the strongest terms. We need to condemn biases and systemic problems that face our police departments and our justice system. We need to stand up for basic human decency and compassion and empathy. We need to just be good people and love one another and love our fellow Americans and stop seeing each other as mortal enemies. Because what's going to happen next while all of this is happening, while we're fighting each other, while we're on the brink of armed civil war? Kim Jong-un, Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, they are moving right now to hit us while we are weak. Russia's already attacked us in an unprecedented cyber attack recently. China is probably involved in the same type of stuff. Kim Jong-un is acting up again. Of course he is. He said, I need to have more nuclear weapons because look at the crazy United States. They're unstable. And now the people that were really our allies that have been trounced upon, Germany and Great Britain and France and all these people that have always been our great allies, are like, yeah, I agree with you. The United States is out of control. How can they now really say that another country shouldn't be able to be a nuclear power? Because who knows what the madman will do in the next 8 days? And that's just, you know, what's going to come next after a President Trump? Somebody that's actually a good con man, not a horrible con man. Somebody that's very well spoken and articulate and charismatic and good looking and brash and can really deceive people, right? What's going to happen then? We need to wake up and come together as a country. I keep saying it. It's the 80% of us that are normal, good-hearted people that we should stand up in one voice and condemn extremism and radicalism of all kinds. Simple as that. We should be good people. We should unite as a country. We should stop seeing things in terms of left and right, blue or red. We should just see the United States of America and that we are going to fail as a country. As divided as we are, we don't destroy ourselves. One of our real adversaries will destroy us, and we can really kiss our country goodbye in real life, not just in Donald Trump speak, right? So kind of out of time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Come This Far podcast. Thank you for letting me get my thoughts out loud. Thanks for going down this journey with me. Let's all say a prayer for this coming week into the inauguration, that we will all be safe, that there will not be any loss of life, that we can have a peaceful transfer of power, and that our democracy will stand as it has for centuries. Thank you for listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor.